Hello and welcome to Studio One for a very special arena with Keela and Brass. It was back in January when we did two roof-raising concerts in for Tradfest at Dublin Castle. The band that brought it all to a crescendo on night number two were iconic trad fusion band Keela. That very evening, we made a pact to bring Keela back here into RTE Studio One for a full show to celebrate the launch of their new album, Raise the Road. This album showcases Keela as never heard before, reimagined through the bold and brassy lens of renowned trombonist and arranger Paul Frost. Tonight, raring to go and live in Studio One, we have the seven-piece Keela and a four-piece brass combo. All in all, 11 musicians on stage. You can't move without clashing into a hi-hat, a bowron or a trombone, not to mention more conventional obstacles like guitars, whistles, mandolins and mandolas. But let us hear what this wonderful collective of creatives can make. This is Disco Pigs!
We'll be right back. zur Nacht. Tut beim Land und nur beim Leben. Ziggen, zeig, zeig oder dort. Wieder zur Nacht, wo man der Schell. Schön hat etwas auch gemacht.
That was Keela and Brass with a track called Disco Pigs from their new album Raise the Road, which are launching live tonight here on Arena. Keela are, of course, three O'Snoddy brothers, Rossa on mandolin, Ronan on baron and on vocal, Colum on flute and vocal as well. Alongside the O'Snoddy brothers, we have on drums Dave Hingerty, on pipes James Mahan, on brass, on bass, Brian Hogan, and on mandola, Senan Brennan. That's Keela. It's going to take me the whole night just to say who's on stage, isn't it? Then we have the brass section. Paul Frost is the leader there. He's on trombone. Mark Adams on trumpet. Kieran Wilde on alto sax and clarinet. Cathal Roach on baritone. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And I will be asking every member of the audience to name all 11 members so that they can go home tonight. It is, just when I name it out there, Rossa, mm-hmm. It gives us, I mean, Keela's always a big event and it's always a big band, but it gives us a real sense of just the size of this project. Where did it all start?
Well, there's four more as well, but they're not here tonight. It all started with an idea during lockdown. And I suppose that started off, the last gig we played before lockdown was in New Orleans, and we got to see a whole load of brass bands there. But but the idea would have had the genesis long previous, but the Leitrim Live performance scheme was available the second
round. You're living in Leitrim, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm living in it, and there was like the second round of it. So I was, you know, encouraged to apply, because I didn't bother applying for the first one. I just, so then I went, imagine if... This is something I've been imagining for years. Imagine if. So we applied, and we were awarded with the opportunity to do this.
And when you say imagine if Keela could have a big brass section in behind mm-hmm. it as well. Like, when did you start imagining that?
Well, I mean, it was just like, okay, well, there's a whole pile of money available thanks to the Arts Council.
But we've added
brass to various tunes over the years. But there is this famous band from Quebec called La Boitine Souriante. And I remember seeing them in 1991 and blew the head off me. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Now, they're playing trad tunes and singing in French. And they're very, very much in the New Orleans style, more so of what they do. Paul didn't do that. Paul gave us something even better.
Mm-hmm. The Paul that you're talking about is Paul Frost, who's standing right beside you there. But I'm wondering, Paul, maybe just give us a sense of your background in brass playing and in classical music and orchestral music.
Well, first of all, I'm from Cork. Let's establish that first. I'm from Cork. Learned from the,
Cork. I think you only had to say two syllables and we kind of worked that out.
Well, in the Cork scene music, we did everything. We did classical, we did big band, we did everything. So that's what I've been doing all my life, from big band to orchestra, to small bands, to pop bands, to musical bands, to pit bands, to opera. Do a lot of opera at the moment. So all that influence came into my writing. I'm also an arranger and a composer. So all the influence come in at once. It's not just the New Orleans things that the lads are on about. It's my stuff as well. It's kind of Mingus big band. It's kind of Tower of Power. It's, whatever suits the actual tune itself.
But how difficult was it to, we can hear that the two sounds are married and are married perfectly now. You've played this in a couple of occasions. The Leitrim gigs that Russell was mentioning there. There have been other recordings kind of working towards this new album. How difficult was it to get the discipline of the brass grouping to match the nature of Aquila performance?
Yeah, pretty difficult at the start, in fairness. It's a different world. The trad world, the lads world is different to the discipline that I would have had, say, in an orchestral thing, where everyone has to be really quiet and listen to the conductor and all that. Whereas the lads, when you're rehearsing with the lads, somebody's playing baron, somebody's shouting over, I'm trying to get the lads to play at figure F. The lads are going, no, it's not the chord of F, it's the chord of G. And then there's a trombone player blasting in the monitor, and you're like, right. It's a bit chaotic at times, but we got there.
So it's not just saying the 11 names that's difficult, it's actually having all 11 things in the room together that's difficult.
All playing at once when you're trying to sort it all out,
Colm, I believe you actually might have been part of what opened Ross's mind up, way back before there was any money available or anything like that. I think you might be responsible for part of this.
Partly. I love brass long, 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 long time ago, and I got my hands on a really bad saxophone, and I played it really badly.
Have you played for Paul yet?
There is a solo on the album by me, actually, in the middle. It's a toneless solo. It's in the John Coltrane style.
Oh, right.
The engineer, he asked me to just blow. And
a toneless solo.
Yeah, and he loved it so much. I remain to be convinced. But he adores it, so... I really did love the brass, and for years, myself and Ross are very close musically, so what he heard, I heard. At one stage, we brought Richie Buckley in with a friend of his, and we did, for the Gambler's Ballet album, we did brass on three or four tracks, but it didn't work. And then occasionally there was a track or two. But always in the back of my mind, it'd be lovely to do it. And as Ross said, imagine if. And listen, it was him imagining if. He ran. Yeah. This was Ross's.
Yeah, you have to imagine it, but then you have to get that into an actual reality of happening. Were there people, I suppose, way back in the background who had, or in the realms of history, music history, I suppose, at this point, early stuff that you were listening to, even in early Aquila days, that were an inspiration towards this? Like, you're talking about 1991, did you say, that you started thinking about it?
Yeah, but there are other stuff like that band. It wasn't a band, it was a Serbian composer called Joran Bregovic, and he put out an album with the soundtrack for the underground film, where fabulous film, but they're all playing this brass stuff, and amazing kind of polkas, like, it's Eastern European polkas.
Yeah, we can't do that.
Well, it's that kind of madness they have in that sound, And then there's stuff when we were over, we played with a band over in Japan. We did a tour, and these guys were playing before us and after us. It was like a three band tour over in Japan, and I got to play with a couple of them. I took out the clarinet and basically they're playing in B flat. That's the notes in the clarinet. I get about five notes, and I just hold them every now and again. They're just playing away in the they're playing away in the like we'd be playing a session, they'd do the same.
But I guess even further back than that, you'd have been listening to bands like Moving Heart and Keith Donald's saxophone like that. But that's a general influence on Keely.
For sure.
But you can see it really coming to the fore in this album.
So, like, you know, the biggest influence on us is, you know, most of what Donal Lunny did.
Yeah.
Like, we were doing covers of Planxty, we were doing covers of obviously Moving Heart, we were doing covers of Body Band, and, you know, a lot of people who are arranging trad music, even of course the likes of Mushroom and Horselips and Stockton's Wing and Day Dan, and they were big influences.
Finally, Paul, just I'll let you get back now for the second track shortly. That New Orleans aspect of things, you know that scene in The Sting where they're all the bands walking down the street and suddenly there's this real funereal death march, and then they break into this wild kind of jazz solo. How did that influence the way you arrange things for this album, that type of playing?
It's definitely an influence. It doesn't suit every track. It's definitely on one or two tracks, that kind of wild kind of razzing it and improvising over what the lads already do.
Mm.
I mean, there's a bit of that, but there's also really strict, like, clean hits, you know, to enhance stuff, you know, so, yeah.
Well, listen, I'll let the three of you go back to your place because we want to get back into the music. And to set us off into the next track, I'm actually going to go to James Mahon, who's the piper with Keely, because this is your composition. But even as I was talking to you beforehand, James, you were very keen to say, yeah, my composition, but there are others involved.
Well, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. All of our collective kind of creative voices are heard and encouraged in Keely. And this tune came about, it was a tune that pre-existed my time in Keely. It's a co-write. I wrote it with a friend of mine in Bray, Claire O'Donnell, harpist. And so we were playing around, and that's how our music evolves a lot of the times. We're just, you know, we're playing. And as I went into this tune, and Ronan just identified a song of his that was kind of cooking up at the same time that might marry well with it. And that was the kind of beginning of it. And then through the gigs, through the performances, the music evolves and turns into, you know, what it is. And so, yeah, this is...
And it is called?
It's called Boudon.
Boudon from Keely and Brass. Thank you. Avedon from Keela and Brass. We'll be back with more from this arena special in Studio One after the break. And welcome back to this arena special launching Raise the Road, the new album from Keela and Brass. And standing right in front of me now, the trio Snoddy Brothers, mandolin player Rossa, Colm on flute and vocal, both of whom we spoke to before the break, and then in with us for this chat is Ronan on baron and vocal as well. I want to chat a little bit about, yes, we've talked about how the brass and the Keela kind of meld in together, but I want to go back in time, into the mists of time, back to the early days of the O'Snoddy household. Were there any saucepans, plates, chairs or tables safe around you, Ronan O'Snoddy? Because the way you play that baron is frightening.
I have a tendency to get kind of excitable. And then I suppose, like, it has been pointed out to me, and nowadays I can see myself on YouTube or Instagram, and
there's no hiding.
So I get to see what they see. I didn't know it was like that. But
I suppose what I'm wondering is, back in those early days, you grew up in Sandymount. The three of you grew up in Sandymount, and Ross, I'll come to you on this aspect of things. How creative a household was it? How free a household was it? How open a household was it to all of this? Because your mother and father were both involved in the arts.
Oh, I suppose, I read an article that was done in a women's magazine about, and myself and Rona were mentioned or had photos of, we were four and five or something. And, at the end of the article, it was like, and these kids will grow up thinking that it's normal to have a mother as an artist and a sculptor.
Yeah.
And that was it was really that, you know. And I remember years later, meeting friends who were going to NCAD, and it was a massive struggle to convince their parents that they wanted to be artists, like ginormous struggle, kind of, never speaking to their parents ever again, and they go to university to do what they wanted to do. There was no question of that in our house. It was like, there wasn't the pressure to do anything other than what you might be passionate about. That was the main thing. If you're passionate about it, go for it.
Go for it. And on Gaeliga Awan column, on Changa Visha Chach.
Yeah, Gaeliga Awan, yeah. Yeah,
just true. Irish. Now, because neither of your parents were from the Gaeltacht.
Well, my dad, when he was, he doesn't remember a time where he didn't have Irish. There must have been one of the A schools back then. So yeah, He grew up in Carlo, so he had Irish. He founded a Cunanan Gaeilge branch when he was 14. And my mum was always good at languages, so she would have had French and Italian. And then when they met, they decided to speak Irish together. But my mum's aunt or cousin had done the same thing with a guy called Adon O'Briscoe or something like that. Mm. So there was a kind of precedent involved.
In the family?
In the family, yeah, to do this kind of thing. But it was a bit strange, I'm sure, because, I remember another friend who did a similar things, and she was sick, and her mum was tending to her, and the dad was walking around the room with a dictionary trying to find out what was wrong with her in Irish.
So, and slightly eccentrics.
you attended Scoil-Lorcan then at the primary school, but how unusual were you within the Sandymount environs in that respect?
It just occurred to me, because Ross was saying this thing was whenever we were four or five and the journalist was talking about us, but sure, I didn't have a word of English then. I remember going down the road in John's Road playing with some kids and realising, oh no, I haven't a clue what they're saying. I'm in big trouble here. I need to watch telly, read the newspaper. I need to listen to the radio. I need some English, because they're all talking English and I hadn't a word of it. Like, so deeply embarrassing for me. I thought, I'm going to work hard on this stuff.
And Shin Drasil Shid Galair.
Or Scoil-Lorcan, yeah.
Scoil-Lorcan, or Deuce, Ogs and Shin Kalosh the Owen. Kalosh, go ahead.
Yeah, but I'll blow my topic. But none of you made on it, Og. I suppose there was a glushacht, and it was glushacht ag oi diacht na gwaelga, agus clown na gwaelga. But vi fai blesin bun skull si a sicuri in
Dean Green.
Vi si cunnan skull a vuna, a gemma leisga. But so we were brought down for the first month of every year and the last month of every year, more or less, to keep, so there's enough Dalty on the
lower,
whatever you call it.
Colm, you wrote a book about this, actually, didn't you?
It took me a long time, yeah.
It's
all there.
School
yeah.
School yeah. Dean Queen, and then Cloisteáin.
Yeah, so good to give the School Dean Queen a good dimension in there. But Cloisteáin, I suppose we're talking in the 70s, 80s type of thing, Ross?
Chuig Mr. Stock in 1983.
Right.
But on Rudda Chonic Main on Achravain, Bonnacill Fogger, there was no band left in the school, and we were going into a school thinking there'd be bands. Colm was in sixth year, and him and Liam and Wainley had just left the year previous, so he was in there with Fiachna and Colm and Wainley, but they were concentrating on Ortesht. So there were no bands in the school. And then by second year, it was like, okay, well, I got asked the lads who were in the in me, who I used to play with in Scolurcon, said, come on, we'll form a band. And so that was in '84.
Yeah, and yourself and Roman were very much instrumental, no pun intended, in the beginning of all that. But you dropped some of the names there. Liam O'Mahony, Fiachna O'Brien, Colm McNamara was there. Glenn Hansard was there.
Well, he wasn't.
No, Glenn Hansard wasn't in Cloisteáin. No.
The Odlums. That's who you're thinking. David Odlum, Carl Odlum.
Yeah, Cormac Brannock.
When you look now at Irish music and Irish traditional music, all of these
Nulig O'Neill
that came out of Cloisteáin. What was going on in Cloisteáin?
I think there was an enormous sense of idealism that this was the first secondary school, Os Gaeilge, in South County Dublin, in the south side of Dublin. Let's say there was one, the Cloister were in the north, and it had to bloody work. And if it was going to work, it was going to do it through music and through the arts, and it was going to do it through sport as well. And it was going to be brilliant. And everything that was going to be produced was going to be brilliant. All the people were... It was a remarkable idea.
It was the last shot. So the government had given up on the Irish in 1968. And in 1966, really, they just said, OK, no one has to teach to Irish anymore. Conor na Gaeilge decided in 73 that, or some people in Conor na Gaeilge decided they set up Gaeilge Scoileanna. So basically, it was the last
beginning
shot.
Of the Gaeilge Scoileanna movement.
In 1941, there were 623 Bun Scoileanna Lán Gaeilge in the country. By 75, there was 11 outside the Gaeltacht.
Wow.
So there was an active kind of de-Gaelicising of the Department of Education. So this was a rearguard action.
And music and the culture and the sort of things that you're expressing there were very much part of that. But this might make it sound like that you spent your time speaking Irish and you spent your time playing Irish instruments. We have sports stars in our midst as well. let's start with you, Rossa.
All right. Well, I ended up on the Leitrim County hurling team after I thought my hurling days were over.
Yeah.
So I was playing.
Senior hurling team.
This is it.
Talking senior hurling here.
Yeah, and I was sprinting faster than a lot of them at the age of 35. That's when I started my senior hurling trip. And so I did 2 years with them then, and then. A couple of years later, I went back as a goalie, but they dropped me at the first match.
So maybe that wasn't quite the colourful sports career that you had hoped for. But Colm, yours was a whole different ballgame. Yours was a serious level of sport, because you didn't join the band while you were at school, apart from the Ardteisht that the fellas were saying when you were doing your leaving, you were studying.
Later, yeah.
But post-leaving certificate, you were deeply involved in soccer and in football.
Yeah, I wanted to play soccer for a living. That's what I wanted to do, so... I ended up playing part-time, part-time professional, but I didn't go to England or anything, that's what I wanted to do, yeah.
Yeah, but, I think you've been quite modest. You played for League of Ireland teams.
I did the circuit. I ended trials with Rovers, spent time with Shelburne. I'm always a Shelburne player, I was told, by the manager as I was leaving UCD.
And was there Wanderers. Scouts Bray across Wanderers the water in the at end. One point as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, no, the scout was really looking at Ronan. Ronan was kind of a angelic toes, and United were looking at him. So
the sports was going on in the background here as well, Ronan?
Yeah, again, and I was just copying my big brother. So if he wanted to go to England, I was going to England. I think, like with the Bowron, I kind of overdid it. Do you know what I mean? I got really restless and I kind of...
Kicked the ball too hard.
Well, no, not quite that. I just overdid it. I kind of exhausted myself, and I got this thing. It's called anxieties or something. Mm. And I used an injury as an opportunity to get escape. Out. Yeah.
Well, look, we'll let the two major sportsmen go back to the space. Go back to the... No, stay here, Russell, because you're going to introduce the next piece for us. Because this... Great, skill on a jazz.
Sketamini, a barakini riga, and I was we're living in South Circular Road, off South Circular Road, with my my partner at the time, my now wife, and Roisin. Lockery, if she's listening, she's going to be. I was trying this tune out, and I was sitting at the end of the bed trying this tune out, and her toes were wiggling away, and she was going, "What's the name of that tune?" And I says, "Her Royal Waggledy Toes." So.
So Shin and Tana Matar are on foes.
Shin and Tana Matar are foes, yeah. Sketamini, a barakini riga.
Yeah, Toshi Wadnis, Desha, yeah. Sketamini, a barakini
riga.
Riga, royal toes. Okay, let us hear it then. Her royal waggledy toes from Keela and Brass. And Roisin, get your shoes off, get your stockings off, and let your toes waggle.
Thank you.
It is absolutely no wonder whatsoever that Roisin's right royal toes were waggling listening to that. That is her royal waggly toes from Keela and Brass, and we'll be back with more after this break. And welcome back to part three of this special arena with Keela and Brass. This is on Yalloch Ermahoir.
Snurra algum slangum kvinnin og sjef
How absolutely beautiful was that? That was Colm O'Snoddy on vocals and Kieran Wilde on alto sax. Cathal Roach on baritone sax. Mark Adams on trumpet. Paul Frost on trombone. Kind of a tough one to follow that, Brian Hogan. Who you put your
gun? Glad you came to me.
Yeah,
brilliant.
I decided to come to you as the bass player. There's a few non-O'Snoddies in the band. There's yourself. There's James, who we were talking to earlier on, and Sennan on guitar here behind you. You joined the band in 1996, Brian, was it? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
talk to me about that dynamic of coming into the group, you know, which was essentially a family group. There were others involved there as well. Yeah. You had a brother, didn't you, that was involved?
Lance, my brother, Lance. And we were had been working with them on soundtracks. We were in film college together, Dunleary Art College. Mm. And we'd been using, everyone at the last minute needed a soundtrack, and my brother was recording at the time, so he ended up with the job of all the student films. And we all got to know them then, so.
And that that kind of fusion, or I suppose that fusion of all kinds of world influences that Keeler were doing at this time.
Yeah.
If you think of that period in the 90s, world music was,
yeah, was
a huge
exploding.
Kind of explosion of things at the time.
Well, there was a lot going on. I mean, you were talking about Moving Hearts before. That was a big influence, because myself and Lance would have come from a more rock and roll and folk background, as in American folk. I tell you, I remember seeing Cooney and Begley, those sessions in Whelan's.
Mm.
And I said, oh, I want to do some of that. Because the energy was, I'd never seen trad played with such gusto as they were doing it. Really.
And so then
that was amazing. You know?
Did you come to Keeler? Did they come to you? Or how did that start up?
Reluctantly, yeah. I mean,
which?
They offered me a tour and then they took it away from me, didn't they? Yeah, you remember that? I remember that. So they got the original bass player, they went over to Prague and he fell in love and stayed there. So I got the gig.
All right.
That's actually where I met Mark Adams first, because remember, he left Dig Dis as well. Do you remember that?
Okay. Well, the rest of your history you can
there
keep private for yourself. Brian, thanks so much.
Thanks to
all of you. As you mentioned, Dave Hingerty, as I say, and Sennan, who are the other two non-family members, Dave on drums and Sennan on both the guitar and the mandola, which is a kind of a cross between the mandolin and the bouzouki, I guess. We could say that. Well, I'm going to say it anyway. But that is almost it for tonight's Keeler and Brass special to mark the launch of their album. The album is called Raise the Roads. My thanks to Coramila Mahago Galair, Rossa, Colm, Agus Ronan O'Snoddy, Dave Hingerty on drums, James Mahan on pipes, James Mahan on pipes, Brian Hogan on bass here, Sennan Brennan on guitar, and the brass section, Paul Frost, Mark Adams, Kieran Wilde, and Cathal Roach. On sound tonight for RTE, we had Gar Duffy, Kieran Cullen, and Mark Dwyer. The arena team are Kay Sheehy, Paula Shields, Sinead Egan, and Ollie Hamilton. Back with you as usual tomorrow night in the usual studio, but we're still here for another little bit in Studio One to finish. Keeler and Brass will see us out with Ór agus Airgead.
surrogates. Oh, look at surrogates. Oh, look at surrogates. Oh, look at surrogates. Oh, look at surrogates.